This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, U.S. President Donald J. Trump and his relationship with the media.
And I want you all to know that we are fighting the fake news. It's fake, phony, fake. A few days ago, I called the fake news the enemy of the people, and they are. They are the enemy of the people. Because they have no sources. They just make them up when there are none.
President Donald J. Trump speaking at the Conservative Political Action Conference near Washington in mid-February. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. While President Trump made no mention of the press in his recent address to a joint session of Congress, there is no reason to believe that the media will not continue to be one of President Trump's favorite foils. His chief White House strategist, Steve Bannon, has blamed reports of internal rivalries and chaos in the administration on an intensifying feud with the media. Mr. Bannon has gone so far as to say that the press is the so-called opposition party. In a presentation to the same gathering of conservative activists, Mr. Bannon said of reporters, quote, "They're the corporatist, globalist media that are adamantly opposed to an economic, nationalist agenda like Donald Trump has," unquote. The First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, adopted in 1791, guarantees freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and peaceable assembly, among other rights. While criticism of the press is certainly legitimate, and media coverage in the United States warrants a serious, balanced discussion, critics say that Mr. Trump tends to praise coverage that is flattering, while he often denounces as, quote, fake, that which is not. Former President George W. Bush said recently that the United States won't be able to convince authoritarian governments, including Russia, to open up their governments to media scrutiny if U.S. leaders try to discredit their own press. Former President Bush said, quote, "We need an independent media to hold people like me to account. Power can be very addictive, and it can be corrosive, and it's important for the media to call to account people who abuse their power, whether it be here or elsewhere," unquote. So, do characterizations of the press as dishonest or as fake news erode a fundamental pillar of U.S. democracy and undermine our impact abroad? Is there something fundamentally different about the way the Trump administration views the press and its role compared to previous administrations? In Mr. Trump's mind, what distinguishes the so-called fake news media from just the media? With us to analyze Trump's contentious relationship with the news media are Tom Rosensteel. He's executive director of the American Press Institute and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. He is also a media critic, co-founder of the Committee of Concerned Journalists, and author of 7 books, the latest of which is Shining City. And W. Joseph Campbell. He's professor in the School of Communication at American University here in Washington. Professor Campbell is the author of 6 books, the most recent of which is Getting It Wrong, Debunking the Greatest Myths in American Journalism. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thanks very much.
Good to be here, Carol.
Well, Tom Rosensteel, let me begin with you and acknowledge that we're in a very complex media landscape. We have electronic media, network, TV, cable, print, web publications, bloggers, and so forth. So we are definitely in a different landscape than many decades ago. So with that background, let me ask you, though, do you see something fundamentally or somehow qualitatively different about the way the Trump administration views the press and its role compared to previous administrations?
Yes. It's not unusual for administrations and people in government to be annoyed by the press, to be critical of the press, and, you know, they are fundamentally in conflict with the press structurally, as that's part of their job. They're trying to advance their policies, and the press is there to keep them account. So that's a relationship of friction. And Democrats have been irritated by the press, as have Republicans. There has been, for 25 years or longer, a growing sense by Republicans in the United States that the press was liberal, and that's coincided with new technology. It started with talk radio, which set itself up in the United States as an alternative press. But qualitatively, what we're hearing from Trump is different. Language like the opposition party is different. Language like the enemy of the people is different. Deriding the press as fake news and confusing the term fake news with critical news is qualitatively different. And these are actually techniques that we have seen in non-democratic countries. And in fact, journalists from around the world who'd covered repressive regimes even predicted that we might hear precisely this rhetoric. So I think people are alarmed because these terms and these phrases come from the playbook of anti-democratic countries.
Turning to you, Joseph Campbell, are you disturbed or in any way concerned about the rhetoric we're hearing from this administration? And do you see that it's more than just a natural inherent friction, but that this is something different?
Trump is an exaggeration and an example of this tense relationship that almost always characterizes relations between the news media and the president. And this goes back decades, goes back to the time of Lincoln, if not before, even to Jefferson, the founding fathers. Turbulent relationships between the news media and the president have always, always happened. Trump is, as I say, an exaggeration of this tendency, of this trend. And I think we should keep it in mind that he, bashing the press as he does, is playing to his crowd, playing to his audience, playing to his base. They love it. They love when he pushes back. And they love it when someone is standing up to a news media that they see as arrogant, as left-wing, as elitist, as deceptive and deceiving. And it resonates with many Americans in Trump's base. And also, there is good reason for being suspicious about media performance, because only a third of Americans have a high regard of the news media in terms of their trustworthiness as to whether they can get the story right. Because according to the Gallup organization in its survey that takes every year about the level of trust that Americans find in the media, feel that the media do warrant that level of trust. And that is the lowest level. 32% is the lowest level that Gallup has ever recorded in this survey that they take every year and have done so for the last 20 years. So that's a troubling sign. I'm not sure the news media in this country take those data seriously enough and recognize that there is a problem within the news media in terms of the trust level among Americans.
How do you see that trust level among Americans, Tom Rosenstiel? A third of the public distrust the press. How do you see the problems?
Yeah, so, you know, I was at the Pew Research Center for 16 years and was involved in producing a lot of this research. And I think it's a little more complex than the survey numbers will register. You're giving people a sort of a blunt question. You know, how much do you trust the press? How much do they get it right? There's a battery of questions. And Joe's right that it's dropped to about a third and two-thirds more distrustful. But there's some nuance here, and one of the signs of nuance is the fact that people are consuming more news than they ever have, contrary to what some people thought would happen when the internet came along and you could sort of watch anything or amuse yourself any way you wanted to. People are actually consuming a lot of news in places like social media, as well as going directly to news sources. So I think there's one element to this, is that these surveys are registering annoyance with the media in general. But it doesn't mean that folks don't feel that there's media, that the sources that they can turn to and rely on and like and trust and use a lot. In fact, we did an experiment a few years ago when I was at Pew Research Center where we asked the traditional trust questions, and then we asked people, what media do you have in mind when you think of the press? And the most prevalent answer was cable news. Then we asked a different battery of people, a different sample of people, thinking of the news media that you use most often. And then we ask the same battery questions about accuracy, trust, helping democracy or hurting democracy. And the numbers flipped. And two-thirds at that point said, thinking of the media they use most often, they think they get the facts right and they trust them. So there's a certain phenomenon here that's a little bit like Americans' attitude towards Congress, which is the ratings of Congress are very low, but people keep reelecting their own local congressperson.
Indeed. Well, back to you, Joseph Campbell. What do you make of Mr. Trump's calling the media the fake news media? And how do we distinguish between this fake news media that he considers fake news and the media? Because he likes to make that distinction. He criticizes anybody who says, I didn't call the entire media the enemy of the people, just the fake news media. What's the difference?
Well, he's not very clear about that, is he? He does have some semantic issues that you mentioned in your opener there. And again, he lumps the news media into one large pot and doesn't distinguish very well between or among them. And I go back to the point I made earlier, that it does play to his audience. It does play to his crowd. It resonates with those folks who do see the media as arrogant, out of touch, detached, left-wing, what have you. And the polling data that I mentioned earlier, this is an issue of trust. Gallup is asking this question over time. So there's some longitudinal data here, whether Americans have a great deal or a fair amount of trust in the news media. And it goes back to the mid-90s, at the dawn, if you will, of the digital era. And at that time, about 55% of Americans said that they had a great deal or a fair amount of trust in the media. These days, it's down to 32%, and it's a trend that should be more worrisome to the news media, fake or otherwise. And there have been a number of examples in recent weeks and months in which the news media have gotten it spectacularly wrong. And I think that these cases are part and parcel of what Trump is telling and aiming at his audience. And
such
his,
as?
An example comes to mind is the Washington Post story at the end of last year, in which the Post reported that the Russians had infiltrated or penetrated America's electrical grid. It turned out that that story was far less dramatic than that story suggested. It was one operator at one utility in northern New England who had malware on his laptop computer that may have had Russian origin. It's far from the dramatic story that the Post had presented, in which the Russians had penetrated the electrical grid, which would be a serious story if it had been true. And it's an example of the kinds of stories in which the media do get it wrong and sometimes don't seem to learn from their lessons.
Do you think these are more of an exception to the rule, or how do you see it, Tom Rosensteel?
Yeah, I mean, I've made my living as a press critic pointing out the foibles of the press, and I think there is an ideological problem in the press. But I got to say, Joe, that there's 200 stories produced by the New York Times every day, and we're still talking about two stories here as examples that actually were both corrected pretty quickly. The difference,
let me just
finish this point. The point here is that there's a repertorial press that exists that is grown up, that's got a lot of reporters, shoe leather, going out trying to find things out. Most of the investigative reporting that is produced in the United States comes out of this declining but still a substantial traditional mainstream press. What has grown up in its place is largely a commentary press online, on cable. And what Trump is doing is not actually exaggerating in a sloppy way. I think it's exaggerating in a very calculated way to discredit anything that is critical of him so that he can ignore things that are deeply reported if he finds them inconvenient. I mean, the purpose of fake news, when we begin to see it surge during the election, where you have manufactured information that comes from news organizations that don't really exist, the information is false on its face, there's no reporting, it's just made up. The purpose of that is to make people doubt all news, to be skeptical of any news, and Trump is sort of playing off of that. And so the use of the term fake news on his part is not sloppy, it's deliberate.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are Tom Rosensteel, from whom you just heard. He's executive director of the American Press Institute and senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. And Joseph Campbell, he's professor in the School of Communication at American University. And we're talking about President Donald J. Trump's relationship with the media. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. And here's a shout out to Ngatia Murigani. He's a loyal fan from Karatina, Kenya. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, Joseph Campbell, to talk about this characterization of the media as crooked and dishonest, as fake news by President Trump. He mentions the New York Times as a failing organization, one of the most dishonest. But let me get back to our point about the role of the freedom of the press here in the United States. It's seen as a guardian of democracy. It holds the powerful to account, as President George W. Bush reminded us in my introduction. So it's not very nice to anybody necessarily. There is going to be an inherent adversarial relationship. Do you think Mr. Trump is perhaps taking coverage too personally? Some critics say he may be trying to hide something.
And that might be what?
Maybe he's not happy about some reports that are coming out, which are not just unflattering, but perhaps potentially dangerous to his presidency with respect to whether it's Russian interference, the fact that his first national security advisor, General Michael Flynn, resigned in part due to reports by journalists about his conversations before the inauguration, but after the election, to Russian officials.
Well, that's a good example, and I think it's an example of how no one in this town, at least who I know of, is practicing self-censorship because of Donald Trump's fairly outrageous remarks about the news media and characterization of fake news. I think, if anything, it encourages them to take on and to take closer looks at what the administration is doing. The notion that the First Amendment is somehow under siege in this country is erroneous, exaggerated, and simply just not true. I mean, the First Amendment is being practiced as vigorously and robustly as perhaps ever by lots of people and lots of different platforms. You mentioned in your opener about the rise of social media and other media platforms, and that's absolutely true. And there are more participants in the media landscape than ever before. So to think that Trump is taming the media and encouraging people to indulge in self-censorship or is compromising the First Amendment is, I think, the contrary of what's going on out there.
How do you see it, Tom Rosensteel?
Yeah, no, I agree with Joe on this. I think that the press has got its back up. They feel like they're under siege. And I think the First Amendment is sort of alive and healthy. What remains to be seen is whether or not the administration takes steps to do things that would systematically curtail the freedom of the press. I don't think it really matters whether or not, you know, some organizations are kicked out of informal briefings in the press secretary's office. If there's more of that, I think that might be the beginning of something. But there's no systematic or legal curtailment. I think what is more worrisome is the notion that we will lose a common set of facts, that the Trump would sort of endorse media that is pretty fringe, honestly, and doesn't do much reporting, passes along rumors, is a kind of chatty opinion press, and try and demonize the press that actually goes out and finds out what's going on in the city council locally in every town. There really is a difference between the shoe leather media and the bloviation media, and that difference exists both here in the United States and in every other country where you have people who are trying to, in Walter Lippmann's famous analogy, you know, turn a searchlight in darkness.
Turning back to you, Joe Campbell, I want to pick up on a point that Tom Rosensteel just made. You both are in agreement that the First Amendment is alive and well. That leads me to ask you about what Tom Rosensteel said. Are you worried about us losing a common set of facts, that is, perhaps giving more credence or greater visibility to what some would consider are maybe more fringe outlets, whether it's the Breitbart News or other talk media? We see now they're more involved in the White House briefings. That could be a good thing as long as other more mainstream media isn't kept out.
Well, let's keep in mind that the First Amendment embraces the fringes as well. In fact, it does a good job of protecting what you call fringe opinion. And the mainstream media are not without their failings and not without their flaws and not without their shortcomings. And frankly, sometimes they can sound pretty sanctimonious about their truth-telling-to-power approach to journalism. In fact, some of the most cherished stories that journalists tell about themselves, historically, tend to be myths. They're mythical, like the notion that the Washington Post brought down Richard Nixon through the reporting of Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein. It's the dominant narrative about Watergate, but it's a media myth. It was not the reporting of Woodward and Bernstein that brought down Richard Nixon's presidency. It was far more important factors and forces at work there, including Richard Nixon's own words, because if it weren't for the White House tapes, we wouldn't have found out about Richard Nixon's guilty knowledge of the cover-up of the Watergate scandal. So, you know, this notion of telling truth to power does strike people as a bit sanctimonious at times. And I think that that's another element of the reason why Trump is riling up his supporters, his base, by pointing out the sanctimonious fake media sometimes. It is extreme. It is exaggerated. But, you know, it serves a purpose.
But let me just press you one more time with a follow-up. Are you concerned that by constantly denouncing what Mr. Trump sees as negative coverage as fake news, that ordinary people will fail to distinguish between regular, good reporting, which may be rigorous and at times unflattering, and truly false stories?
I don't think that Donald Trump is the sole agent for that kind of misperception, if it indeed is the case. And the news media have to recognize that they're big boys. This is not playing beanbag here. This is serious stuff. And to get into the news business, you have to be prepared to be criticized. And if you're covering, you know, high administration officials or the White House, you know, you have to be ready to field some criticism from the top officials. And that's what we're seeing here. It's more exaggerated than perhaps it has been in previous administrations, but it's nonetheless part of that tension between the media and the administration. So this is really not new. And I don't think that the dangers that you're identifying or speculating about are really serious dangers. If people are concerned about fake news and they're getting it from different sources, again, that's not something that Donald Trump initiated. In fact, the fake news notion came from the other side of the aisle after trying to explain Hillary Clinton's loss in the November elections. That was one of the factors that brought fake news to the fore.
Well, that brings us to a very good point, and that's why this bandying about the label fake news is so disconcerting, the need to make a distinction between fake news. Now, we saw fake news pushed by Russian trolls and other bots in the run-up to the election. We saw false stories that could not be substantiated. So that was fake news. So how do you compare that to simply stories which are perhaps unflattering? How do you see it, Tom?
Yeah, well, first of all, it ain't true that the concept or the phrase fake news emerged after the election as a way of explaining Hillary Clinton's loss. The explanation for Hillary Clinton's loss is her PAD campaign. There was an awareness of fake news stories and their prevalence and their velocity online and their ability to exploit Facebook's algorithm well before the election had occurred. We saw its rise through the course of the summer, particularly as Facebook changed its algorithm for other reasons. And the notion that Trump's rhetoric is a slight exaggeration of what we've seen throughout history is also not true.
Well,
the last president to use the phrase enemy of the people relating to the press was Richard Nixon, and we haven't seen it since. And it is qualitatively different, and I think it is dangerous, particularly because Trump's not signaling the Wall Street Journal here or other sort of fairly respectable news outlets. The ones he cites as respectable are Fox and Friends, which is a chat show in the morning that is sort of, even by Fox standards, pretty fringe, and Sean Hannity, another talk show. And then he has the CEO of Breitbart, which is absolutely one of the most extreme sites that is pushing racist allegations out there. And Breitbart is his chief strategist. So we're not talking about people preferring conservative media to liberal media. We're talking about a president who has put both arms around some of the most esoteric or exotic media that exists in the United States.
And as we close, let me just ask you, and then I'm going to give Joe Campbell the last word. To what extent do you think the rhetoric emanating from Mr. Trump and Steve Bannon, for example, has a somewhat of a corrosive effect on our democracy and civil discourse? We're getting feedback from some listeners who say some of the language they're hearing reminds them of the kind of language you hear about the press in the Third World or places like Russia or China. They are authoritarian states and they don't have a free media. They're wondering what's going on in the United States. So to what extent do you think the rhetoric is so exaggerated, so disparaging of the news media that it may have a corrosive effect on civil discourse here in the United States?
I think it's not just civil discourse that we have to worry about. Basically, facts matter. And if you begin to create alternate facts, alternative reality, you're in Orwellian territory. And the reason that people are alarmed in the United States is because they're wondering whether we're on the perimeter of entering Orwellian territory.
Well, Joseph Campbell, you get the last word.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of hand-wringing going on out there that's really extreme. We are not nearing Orwellian territory by any means. The robust First Amendment is as robust as ever and is practiced as vigorously as it can be. Fake news did not make a difference in terms of the outcome of the election, but to characterize what's going on here as Orwellian is really, I'm afraid, quite extreme and quite inaccurate.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. I'm sure we'll be discussing this in the weeks and months to come. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Tom Rosensteel. He's Executive Director of the American Press Institute and Senior Fellow at the Brookings Institution. And Joseph Campbell, Professor in the School of Communication at American University. Gentlemen, thanks again for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Rashad Smith, and Encounter was produced right here in Washington. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.